Today's episode of Market Talk is brought to you by GrowMark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least. But there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next. And good afternoon. Welcome into a Friday edition of Market Talk for September 24th. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Thank you for joining us as always. We can be found online very easily. MarketTalkAg.com is our home on the web. All of our social media links there, our streaming sources, news of agriculture, much more. It's all online, markettalkag.com. Fairly quiet Friday to wrap up what has been an eventful week, to say the least, in the market trade. Let's talk about all of it. Let's bring in our good friend Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. And Mike, good afternoon to you on a Friday, you know, going into a weekend where we're talking about a lot of harvest activity across the country. Fairly quiet day today. Little strength in wheat, but you know, otherwise, even there, we were kind of fading a little bit back and forth towards the end of the day. Quarter beans mixed. Overall, just felt like a pretty quiet, lazy day in the market, so to speak.
Yeah, kind of welcome, if you ask me, Jesse. We had a harvest Friday, as you say, and it would have been no surprise to me after seeing the rally since midweek, as you say, led by the wheat, that the corn and beans would give back some of their gains as we really ramp up into the heart of harvest now, especially in the Western Corn Belt, which remains very, very dry. And talked to a producer in West Central Illinois this afternoon, and he told me he's even been dealing with some corn that's below 15% moisture right now. So even east of the Mississippi River, we're getting some pretty dry corn and bean readings out there still. But yeah, I mean, this is where I think the Friday ability to not have a real bad harvest sell-off or a more deep cut into the gains for the week really was about the supply issue again. The supply side kind of won out. The wheat market had a lot of chatter about maybe China coming in and buying U.S. wheat. That was in the middle of the week. And then Friday we had seen, and I think it's been confirmed at this point, that they are going in and getting some more Australian wheat, as Australia looks like they have a pretty decent crop again this year. So I think that supported the market quite a bit. The supply side of the energies, especially where we saw the crude oil market get back up to close to $75 a barrel. And that was a really nice thing to see too, as we're, you know, dealing with a 3-year low in the crude oil market right now. And so that's, I think, what kind of capped off the week. We dealt with the Evergrande Chinese situation very, very well. We dealt with the pork herd and the sow herd in China being dropped by mandated to be cut. We even dealt with late week news that about 20 crushing facilities in China were shutting down to conserve power. We dealt with all those things very, very well on top of the harvest. And so I would have to say we probably have a little bit of premium in this market going into the grain stocks report next week.
Well, you touched on quite a few things there, Mike, that are kind of hovering around the trade, and I think we should break these down and talk about a few of them. I think to start, you know, we need to look at the supply chain issues and the issues in the Gulf, because, you know, this is, we're entering that key time, especially soybeans. We like to, you know, we ship out a lot of beans. It's a lot of a big export time. And, you know, we look at that. We look at some of the worries about getting these facilities back online and running and moving the barges. But I think as well, you know, another question I'd like to ask you is, you know, where's the demand at? That's another thing I think we're watching closely. So why don't you give us some thoughts on just what we're seeing with the Gulf and some of this export and supply and demand right now?
Well, you bring up some really good points, and I'm fearful that we're going to have this all come to kind of a head next week, because you and I have been talking about how we need the Gulf of Mexico to find some real gains in shipments, and we're just not getting it. And some of the recent USDA data that they put out in the weekly transportation report this week really shows that in terms of where we're going this year, and it's almost straight down in shipments versus where we need to go in the months of October and November. And that should be essentially straight up and peaking as we get into the holidays. And so we really are at a serious crux right now and serious juncture of getting that Gulf of Mexico up and running. And I think what may also come together and conjoin this and dovetail with it is the grain stocks report, Jesse, because I am fearful of a bigger supply issue in the grain stocks report than maybe what we were thinking 3 or 4 weeks ago. Two reasons. One, because the Gulf of Mexico being down still and Hurricane Ida may be showing up in those grain stocks numbers, because those stocks numbers are technically as of September 1st. And we can see pretty clearly the loss of Gulf basis right around the end of August, and then how it really kind of collapsed. And this is where in the corn basis, you see $1.20 back on August 27th for positive basis. And then it's got slammed to only 45 cents. We've been able to inch our way back up to about 84, 85 cents. And soybeans look almost identical to this chart in terms of their basis for spot loadings at the New Orleans Gulf of Mexico. So, I mean, I'm a little nervous about the grain stocks report showing a little bit bigger stocks because of Ida. And even though the Gulf probably terminals aren't really registered, I think upriver you could have quite a bit of swelling of supplies on that report. And I think if you throw on top of that our very aggressive harvest pace that we're seeing right now compared to the five-year average, you know, it's not uncommon for us in the analytical world to wonder whether the September crop report or September stocks report doesn't have some new crop blended into it. And I think this is one of those years where it very well could. So, you know, kind of capping this whole issue is I'm going to keep my bought puts in place for both corn and beans going into that grain stocks report in case we do see a swelling of supply, and it kind of dashes our expectations of what we expected in a very tight supply situation about 3 weeks ago.
You talk about our aggressive harvest pace as well, Mike, and you know the fact that we're getting in the fields earlier than normal in many, many areas of the country. And you know, we talk about the shipping woes and we talk about barge traffic. I mean, talk to us about this chart a little bit and how this could all play, because I think that's another thing we have to consider with everything here is, you know, if we're moving this grain to the river earlier and quicker, are we going to be able to get that traffic down to the Gulf? And I think that's all just kind of playing in here.
Yeah, this is not going away right now. And this is the problem. And I'll go into more detail about downriver and upriver. But if you look at this chart, you see that for the week ending September 18th, our Mississippi River Lock 27 movement was down 88% lower than last year and 93% lower than the three-year average. And that's really the big number to me, because we had a really strong year starting last year, late in the year, because of the trade agreement with China, because of the tight supplies of South American product. And so we really had a couple things nice come together by the time we got to this point in time. But you see it, where the red arrow is kind of what I was talking about back in the middle of September, where that chart starts at. We were doing lots more business, like more like 400,000 tons of business between corn, beans, and wheat. And now we're doing, you know, maybe 100, maybe 150. And yes, last week, the export sales numbers showed physical shipments getting out about 70% better than the prior week, but we are way far behind where we were last year at this time. And then if you continue on looking from mid-September to late November, you see an upward trend, especially when it comes to the corn. The corn really comes on strong by the time you get to the 1st of October. And this is where it's really going to be paramount. So that's the issue with going down the river and not having a basis level in the rivers and in the interior that farmers can really sell into. And again, that's why I like the put so much, Jesse. The other thing is upriver. When are we going to get the chemicals? When are we going to get the fertilizers? I read just yesterday that the only glyphosate factory that supplies the United States in Louisiana is still down, and they're still looking at maybe another couple weeks on this. This is really going to make it tough as we get into wintertime and as we get post-harvest getting any of our field work done. So I think all this adds up to not only a really, really volatile market, but it really adds up to not just here in the United States, but globally. It's going to be a lot harder to plant corn than beans, given what we're dealing with in terms of logistics, supply chain, as you bring up, and how full our bins are going to be if we don't get this problem rectified very, very soon. And I'll go back to what we talked about the last few weeks, is we really need to see these things come back around, this Gulf shipment come back around by the end of next week. We get into October, that is not going to be good.
Well, again, Mike Zuzulo, our guest with Global Commodity Analytics. We'll continue our conversation on the market trade here as we wrap up the week. We'll do that right after this, as we're back with more Market Talk on the way next. Today's episode of Market Talk is brought to you by GrowMark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
As harvest begins, the American Seed Trade Association reminds farmers to be diligent in taking the proper precautions to ensure treated seed does not enter the domestic or export grain supply. When properly handled, seed treatments are an effective agronomic tool that provides seeds the necessary protection for a strong, healthy start. Completely remove all treated seed left in containers and equipment used to handle harvested grain and dispose of it properly. Always be careful to follow state and federal guidelines for proper handling, storage, and disposal of treated seed. For more information, visit seed-treatment-guide.com or contact your seed dealer.
Trains are everywhere. You should always expect one, even on private property. Only cross tracks at designated crossings that fit your equipment. If you don't fit, don't commit. Whatever you're operating, secure your load, raise your equipment, and avoid getting stuck or causing damage. Minimize distractions. Remember, noisy equipment drowns out the sound of a train. Unless you're crossing, always keep a safe distance from train tracks. Look, listen, live. For more info, go to oli.org.
And welcome back to Market Talk on this Friday, September 24th. Jesse Allen back with you here. Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics in Atchison, Kansas, our guest today on the show. Mike, let's continue our conversation. Another thing that's been swirling around the markets this week is this Evergrande issue in China. And I think we should talk about that in the outside markets here a little bit, Mike. And on Friday, you know, it came out that Evergrande missed their bond payment to foreign bondholders. So still a lot of confusion, I think, surrounding what's going on there, but how much is that playing into our market trade and some of these other outside market factors? Maybe you can talk about that a little bit. I know we have another chart to bring up here with crude oil stocks as well.
Yeah, this is what we were talking about earlier. So we'll just talk about this real briefly. If you look at the purple line, that's our crude oil price in New York, and we're up there around the 74 and a quarter level. That's where we were back in the third and fourth quarter, right before the fourth quarter of 2018. So very similar price action as what we saw back in the third quarter of 2018, because we had super low stocks. Notice the black line, which is actually our stocks levels here, including the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, right around 414 million barrels, very close to where we were back in September, October of last year. And then we started to add stocks into the fourth quarter and then on into 2019. And we saw a pretty big drop in crude oil as a result of that. But this market, you can tell by this chart, I think, Jesse, this market's really trading the tight supplies right now. And it's really nervous about not getting enough supplies because of that supply chain issue that you're talking about. So we're down about 16%. That's what the red dotted line or dash line shows, down about 16.5% in stocks versus where we were a year ago this week. And that's a big deal given the fact that we're trying to come out of COVID and get our prices down so that we have greater demand. And here again, this is something along with 5-year, 7-year highs in natural gas. You keep these kind of things going, and we have distillate inventories that are as low as the crude oil practically at this point here in the United States, and it's going to be really tough to justify corn production next year. So this is more of a chart that indicates that the trade is trading more supply-demand fundamentals, less currencies. Now, blending that into your Evergrande talk and question, Evergrande is the largest property developer in China. If you look at China and the way they grow their economy, the way they feed their people, the way they create their jobs, real estate and surrounding industries around real estate and finance surrounding real estate ends up being up to 1/3 of their economy. And so we've seen major banks cut their GDP levels down for 2022 in the aftermath of Evergrande. And we don't even know what the aftermath is yet, but even early on, we're seeing GDP levels being cut down below 6%, even getting into that 5.5, 5.8% level. We're talking about Morgan Stanley's, Bank of America's, Goldman Sachs. All of them are pretty much jumping on board that they have problems in China. You and I have talked about this. These problems have been around for a while. Evergrande is just a example of the symptoms of what's going on. We see it in their hog industry, that command economy, that economy that tries to control the nitty-gritty details. It's extremely inefficient. And so if everything's not running just great, then everything may be running really, really badly. And this goes back to those 20 crushing facilities that are stalled out now because of what? Because of the desire to cut power so that they have a better green energy profile and footprint. Something just doesn't add up in China right now. And that really makes me nervous about the demand side for commodities. And keep in mind, they are 30 to 40% of the steel demand in the world. They are 10, 15% of copper demand in the world. So China equals commodities. China equals the emerging markets. This is one of those longer term issues that may be influencing us for the next several months. So I think the short term mindset I have is that watch the dollar, watch the Chinese currency. If the dollar starts to go up sharply, Chinese currency starts to go down sharply, that's probably indicating the market's made its decision. And we're going to have to react to that from an analytical perspective as far as getting some maybe more aggressive 2022 soybean hedges in place in particular.
You have a good ear to South America. I know we're starting to watch planting activity there, talking about some rain showers in the forecast for Brazil and Argentina. Any updates on what you're hearing from South America in regards to their planting season?
Yes, I do. And I'm glad you asked, because it's more of the same pretty much, Jesse. The rains coming into southern Brazil is going to help the soybeans. And so soybeans seem a little bit more vulnerable on the supply side if the market sees Brazil coming on. And by the same token, the Brazilians are cutting back again and opening up, it sounds, by reducing their import tariffs on corn to more areas. And I think the time window has also been extended. I haven't read the full release yet, but Brazil looks to be coming in wanting more corn. And it's probably because Argentina is about out at this point, with the Argentine farmer not willing to sell too much more. Same problem for my South American colleague that I talked to this week, as far as what we're dealing with here in the United States and what you brought up on the supply chain, high costs of inputs really probably going to impact the South American plantings if we don't see a lot of change really, really quickly, because they're right on the cusp of having to make some major decisions, whether it's seed cost, inputs, fertilizer, diesel prices, whatever it is. Can the government come in and, especially in Brazil, give the agriculture producer more of a break and subsidize them more? That's something we're going to have to watch here in the next couple of weeks. Otherwise, I think their soybean production is looking greater, and their corn production is probably looking no more than what we did last year. And that would be probably maybe the top end as far as planting and hectares that they're going to put in the ground.
We haven't touched on livestock a whole lot today. I kind of purposely didn't, just because we don't have the quarterly hogs and pigs report or the cattle on feed report here as of airtime today. But just some thoughts on the livestock market here briefly on this Friday, just kind of how we wrapped up and maybe some of what you're expecting to maybe see with those reports, Mike.
Yeah, this is where I think these reports, generally speaking, given all that we've talked about China and the commodities and the hog herd and them coming in saying they're going to buy more pork for their pork reserves, it shows that China and their central planners overdid it in creating too much supply. And right now, the U.S. hog herd and the U.S. hog price action likes this. They're putting premium in the market because they can see and look forward to maybe this liquidation that has been going on in China because prices have gone too low too fast. That's going to be a boon for us as we get into the early part of 2022. So I think we're pricing that in right now, Jesse, especially in the deferred contracts, if we get up another 10, 15 bucks. So when I look at the quarterly hogs and pigs report later today, and I look at the cattle on feed report later today, both of these reports need to feed the bull in terms of giving more solid fundamental news to the market to keep the rally going in the livestock sector. I think that the fat cattle still are the most fair value. December fats right around 123, I would classify as undervalue. 133, overvalue. They're sitting right in between that at 127, 128. So I think the fat cattle have the best value to them right now, given what I think the Packers are going to demand in the fourth quarter. I'm looking at the fourth quarter to be a good beef quarter, and a lot less competition in terms of imports from some of our typical countries that we import from.
Mike, great insight as always. Any final thoughts for us on this Friday?
That'll do it. Just have a great weekend, sir.
Well, I know as well folks can find you and get a free trial online, globalcomresearch.com, can't they?
Yes, please do that. And it's a really important time to take a look at some independent, fresh analysis and see if it doesn't work into your farm or ranch.
Mike, have a great weekend. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jesse.
Well, and again, that's Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics. Find him online, Global Com Research. That's com with two M's, globalcomresearch.com. Big thanks to Mike for joining us here on this Friday. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap up the show here for this Friday, September 24th. Back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
As harvest begins, the American Seed Trade Association reminds farmers to be diligent in taking the proper precautions to ensure treated seed does not enter the domestic or export grain supply. When properly handled, seed treatments are an effective agronomic tool that provides seeds the necessary protection for a strong, healthy start. Completely remove all treated seed left in containers and equipment used to handle harvested grain and dispose of it properly. Always be careful to follow state and federal guidelines for proper handling, storage, and disposal of treated seed. For more information, visit seed-treatment-guide.com or contact your seed dealer.
Trains are everywhere. You should always expect one, even on private property. Only cross tracks at designated crossings that fit your equipment. If you don't fit, don't commit. Whenever you're operating, secure your load, raise your equipment, and avoid getting stuck or causing damage. Minimize distractions. Remember, noisy equipment drowns out the sound of a train. Unless you're crossing, always keep a safe distance from train tracks. Look, listen, live. For more info, go to oli.org.
And we're back to wrap things up on Market Talk for this Friday, September 24th. Jesse Allen back with you here. Cattle on feed report just out. Cattle on feed down 1% for September 1st as cattle and calves on feed for the slaughter market in the U.S. for feedlots with capacity of 1,000 or more head totaled 11.2 million head. Inventory was 1% below September 1st of last year. Placements in feedlots 2% above 2020. Net placements were 2.05 million head. Marketings of fed cattle during August totaled 1.89 million head, slightly below 2020. So that's the cattle on feed numbers. Still analyzing the quarterly hogs and pigs numbers here for you, as we don't have those as of airtime. Thank you again for tuning into the show on this Friday, September 24th. On Monday, John Heimberg with Total Farm Marketing joins us. Have a great weekend. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Take care. We'll talk to you on Monday.